So welcome everyone, and thank you for coming this morning. Is there anybody who is they're here for the first time? So just for those of you here for the first time, usually before the formal teaching begins, there's opportunity for anybody, new or old, to ask questions about meditation, practice, mindfulness, spirituality, all the usual stuff. But because I'm doing something a little different this morning, and I have no idea how long it will take, and it may only take a few minutes, I wanted to start with that first, and then we can get more formal questions and answers afterwards. And what I want to share with you this morning is a story. And even though it is a story that does not come from the Buddhist tradition, I believe it is a story, for me at least, that really, really in a really clearly delineated, insightful way, some of the key teachings of Buddhism, such as, especially the law and cause and effect, and the relationship of past to present and to future. To teachings of loving kindness and compassion, and teachings related to healing, transformation, and enlightenment. They're all in this story. So it's quite a unique story. I would imagine many of you are probably familiar with it. It's called A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. And it's often not presented in the way maybe that I will be presenting it this morning, but I think it is a profound story, and it's one that I've enjoyed every holiday season for many years. So again, I've marked a few places, but it's the story. It's you know, it's 80-something pages, so we can't read the whole thing, even though it's quite wonderful. And many of the presentations in movies or whatever don't really get into, I think, the story, the profundity of Dickens. So you know that Ebenezer Scrooge, who is the hero, we could say, of this story, he's a businessman. Right, he's a businessman, and he was in partnership with many years with a man named Marley, and when the story opens, Marley has been dead for 7 years, and Scrooge has continued on his own, running the business. And again, I'll be skipping over things, but leave it to say that Scrooge is a man alone. He has no friends, he has no companions, he has no interests other than business and money. I mean, this is the import of his life. And there's a very interesting sense in the beginning to give you a sense of Scrooge. When he is visited by a couple of good-hearted men who are, it's Christmas Eve, and they're trying to raise some money for the poor. And they say to him, they come to his office and say, at this festive time of the year, Mr. Scrooge, it is more than usually desirable that we should make some slight provision for the poor and destitute who suffer greatly at present time. Many thousands are in want of common necessaries. Hundreds of thousands are in want of common comforts. And Scrooge's reply to this is, are there no prisons? And they say, plenty of prisons. Are there no workhouses? Aren't they still in operation, says Scrooge. The gentlemen say, yes, they are. And he says, Scrooge says, and the poor law, is it not in full vigor? Yes, it is. Oh, so Scrooge says, you know, I was concerned that all that had stopped when you were saying, coming to me, you know, to be concerned about these people. But then these gentlemen say, but under the impression that they scarcely furnish Christian cheer of mind or body to the multitude. So he says, you know, we're trying to raise some money so we can give them some extra food and drink, means of warmth, etc., so they can feel a little sense of abundance. And they ask him, can we put you down for anything? And, you know, in their book, Fledges, and he says, nothing. Oh, and they say, of course, you wish to remain anonymous? And he says, no, I wish to be left alone. That is my answer. I don't myself make merry at Christmas, and I can't afford to make idle people merry. I help to support the establishments I've already mentioned. They cost enough, and those who are badly off must go there. But the man says, but many don't want to go there. They would rather die. And he says, Scrooge says, if they would rather die, then they had better do it and decrease the surplus population. But then they may go on and ask him about, you know, doesn't he understand anything about this? And he says, none of that's my business. It's enough for a man to understand his own business and not to interfere with other people's. Mine occupy me constantly. Good afternoon. So that gives you a sense of poor Mr. Scrooge. I think we have many Scrooges among us still who see very much the way Scrooge thinks, that to be concerned about business and profit is enough. So what happens? So Scrooge, this is Christmas Eve, he goes home by himself, bah humbug, you know, totally oblivious and really disgusted by all the revelry in the streets. He goes home, goes to his own barren apartments that he used to share with Marley, and he's visited by the ghost of Marley. Right? This is his partner who's been dead 7 years. And Marley is quite pitiful looking, quite horrible looking. And besides just the way he physically looks, his body is ensnared in chains. He's got these heavy chains on him. But he's a ghost. And in the beginning, Scrooge thinks he's just eaten something. That's got to cause him to have an upset stomach. That's why he's seeing this apparition. But Marley convinces him that he's real. I mean, he's a real ghost. And when Scrooge finally gets it, he says, "Dreadful apparition, why do you trouble me?" And the ghost says, "Man of the worldly mind, do you believe in me or not?" "I do," he says, "but why do spirits walk the earth, and why do you come to me?" And this is very interesting what Marley says. He says, "It is required of every man and woman that the spirit within them should walk abroad among his fellow men, travel far and wide. And if that spirit doesn't go forth in life, it is condemned to do so after death. It is doomed to wander through the world. Oh, woe is me. And witness what it cannot share, but might have shared on earth, and turn to happiness." You know, in the Order of Interbeing, in the precepts developed by Thich Nhat Hanh, one of them says, it is the responsibility of the people of the order to not only, to not turn away from the suffering of life, but to actually be willing to go into it, to be present to it, so it can be transformed. And this is really, I think, what he is saying here. That is our duty. And obviously, if it's not done in when we're alive, we do it like a ghost after death. And then the Scrooge asks him, "Why are you chained?" And this is very interesting. He says, "I wear the chain I forged in life. I made it link by link and yard by yard. I girded it on my own free will and of my own free will I wore it. Is its pattern strange to you, Scrooge? It is a strong coil that you bear, Ebenezer Scrooge. It was full and heavy as long as this 7 Christmases ago. That's when Marley died. You have labored on it since. It is a ponderous chain. So this is, you know, this is karma, right? Which means, why... You know, why do I live the life I live? Why do I feel the way I do? Why do I think the way I do? Why do I relate and interrelate the way I do? Well, very much, it's unfortunately we ourselves, out of our own ignorance, have forged the chains of our own misery. We are the creators of our own prison, so to say. And I think that's what Marley is saying to Scrooge. And he's saying, you know, the chains that you see on me that I forged during my life with you, I see that you have continued to build even stronger in the 7 years hence. I mean, it's so many good... There's a line here, he says, but Marley talks about missed opportunities, not to be aware of Christian spirit and kindness, not to have missed so many opportunities for goodness in his life. This was what Marley is saying now to Scrooge. But Scrooge says, but Marley, Jacob, you were always a good man of business, Jacob. Business, cried the ghost, wringing its hands. And this is a wonderful line. Mankind was my business. The common welfare was my business. Charity, mercy, forbearance, benevolence, these were my business. The dealings of my trade were but a drop of water in the comprehensive ocean of my business. I mean, how wonderful. Eh? I mean, if you talk about a selfless life, a bodhisattva life, whatever, I mean, right? I mean, how many people see their life in such a narrow way? Right? You know, so many people in our society are so identified with work and their role in work. And that's a central piece of their life. And everything else is off to the corners, you know. And how many people think, no, my business in life is to take care of other people and to be loving and patient and benevolent. This is my business in life. And whether I work here or do this or do that, that's just kind of how my life unfolds, but that's not my business. So this is, I think, very profound, very wonderful. So then the ghost leaves, and he, if you remember, he leaves with a very fascinating unfolding of what is now going to happen to Scrooge. Remember, he says, you will be visited by three spirits, right? And they really are the spirit of what? The past, the present, and the future, right? I mean, this is, so in other words, he'll be visited, he's really being visited by his own, in the beginning, by his own memories. But memories that he is unconscious about, that he doesn't reflect on, because he is only present to his present, but not in the way that we talk about present. He's only ensnared in his present life, values, way of dealing with things, and has forgotten that he has a past, that there is an unfolding. And I think this is profound that this is what happens now, because, and I think this is why it's instructive for all of us, because this type of deep reflection on cause and effect, especially our own cause and effect, is very liberating. When we understand that where we are today, we did not often consciously choose this path and this place, but it was unfolding, series of conditions and causes that led us to this place that now seems like the only place we can be. But it's only in this reflection that he sees that that's not the case. So first he's visited by the ghost of the past. And if you remember, he takes Scrooge, maybe I can just tell it as I remember it. He takes Scrooge first back to Scrooge's childhood. If you remember, he was in a boarding school. You remember, and he's lots of kids, and yet the Christmas holidays comes and everybody goes home. He's got something obviously with his father. I think his mother had died at his birth and his father sort of wanted nothing to do with him. So he was alone. And when Scrooge is with the spirit of the past and sees him, and for the first time connects with the unhappiness and sadness and loneliness of this child himself, he cries. He sobs. It's very interesting. This hard-hearted man, it's like the first opening, right? He opens to his own suffering, his childhood suffering. And it's a very poignant moment, because when he opens up to his childhood suffering, the suffering of that little boy, he immediately also wants to help him. But the spirit says, no, you can't do that. You can't do that. You're just seeing what was, but you can't go back and make it different. If you remember, he has some more experiences. He has a sister who comes for him and takes him home. His father has changed, and he sees his happiness. He sees his first employer. I forget, Mr. Fuzzy something or other, Fuzzywit or something. What?
Fezziwig.
He sees Fezziwig, and Fezziwig is a great employer. He's very kind and compassionate. And he gives his employees, which is Scrooge and these other guys, lots of freedom and has parties on Christmas and they all dance. And all of a sudden, Scrooge he's touched because he remembers what a fine man he was and how happy he was with him and how kind he was to his employees. And he's struck because, of course, if you remember his relationship to Bob Cratchit, his one employer, he's just cruel, right? Cruel, cruel, cruel. He bemoans the fact that he has to pay him anything, the fact that he pays him anything. He's always belittling him and putting him down for his work. And, even to give him time off for Christmas is like a great indulgence, which real people shouldn't, real men shouldn't have to take off for Christmas or something. So again, all of a sudden he touches this capacity for goodness in the world and for his own, how happy he was in working in that situation. And then his last memory is he had a fiancée that he loved. And she loved him and they were very happy together. But what happened over time is in his is the business was changing and he kind of screwed Fezziwig. He went into partnership with this other young up and coming man in the business with him, and together they formed a new business, and took away Fizzywig's business. And they worked, you know, 12, 14, 16-hour days, 7 days a week. And as his fiancée said to him, because he comes to the scene where she's basically breaking up with him. She says, "I've lost you. You have a new love that has replaced me." And she calls it the "you've fallen in love with gain," G-A-I-N with a capital. All you want to do is gain, to get, and hold on to. In Buddhism, we call that attachment. That's what your whole life is about, and you know. Nurturing relationship with me is no longer what you want in life. All you want to do is to get ahead and gain. So he's quite, you know, he comes out of these experiences shaken. Again, and I think in the course of life, many of us have lost touch with many wonderful, very human qualities that we had as children, as adolescents, as young adults. And causes and conditions and changes from family, from life, from society, have moved our life in very different directions and very different values and priorities than we might have imagined for ourselves years ago. And we have forgotten. We've forgotten the positive for many of us. Hopefully not so many of us. But also we have... not really dealt with the painful, difficult, traumatic events in life that really may have shut us down along the way, wounded us along the way, and therefore caused us to make choices and decisions in life that might not have always come from the healthiest parts of oneself. So Scrooge is quite something at this point. And next he is visited by the spirit of Christmas present. And this is a jolly-looking character. very much the spirit of abundance. And basically, he takes Scrooge on a journey through London, where he shows him all the various ways that people in Christmas present are enjoying themselves. He takes them into homes of people he knows, such as the home of Bob Cratchit, his employee, and Tiny Tim. And he takes them into the home of his nephew, his sisters who had been so kind to him, his sister's son that she had died also in childbirth, and she had asked Ebenezer, please, whatever you do, always watch out for my son, his nephew, of course, which he didn't do because it was just, you know, nurturing and taking care of somebody was just extra in life. It wasn't his business. But so he not only visits the homes of people he knows, but he goes into the streets. He goes into the home of poor people, very poor people, but sees how they have the capacity at all levels of society to be kind to one another and to enjoy one another and have fun with one another. And again, it's sort of like, if we follow the theme, it's the first has shown him how causes and conditions have created him in a certain way. But now he sees that if you can imagine his own life, which is so narrow and constricted and unhappy and empty and bleak, all of a sudden he realizes, oh, there's another whole way of living. in the present, you know, that he just has been oblivious to. There's another whole way of living. It's very much like in our path, where we learn there is another way of living that is very meaningful. It produces joy and happiness and peace and equanimity and ease. Oh, you know, I would have never known that. I thought this kind of hard life, struggling life, emotionally driven life, stressful driven life, this is what life, you know, this was life about. So he now is really quite complete. He goes to almshouses. Anyhow, finally, he's really done. You know, he's really had he's quite changed. And then he has this third visitation, which in a certain way is maybe a necessary one for all of us, and one that we don't enjoy looking at. We'd like it to stop now. But he's visited by the third, the Christmas yet to come. You're about to show me shadows of the things that have not happened, but will happen in the time before us. He feared the silent shape that his legs trembled beneath him, and he found he could hardly stand. Ghost of the future, I fear you more than any specter I have seen. But I know that your purpose is to do me good, and as I hope to live to be another man from what I was, I am prepared to bear your company and do it with a thankful heart. The phantom doesn't speak. It just points, which is interesting. And what the phantom, you know, in the, it's interesting, you know, the Buddha, when people asked him about the future, you know, how's my life going to unfold in the future? The Buddha would say, if you understand what you did in the past, which brought you to the place today, and if you understand what your actions, what your thoughts, what your feelings, what your behavior is in the present, you will clearly understand where your future is going to be. Your future doesn't come out of some other place. Your future comes out of you, and it comes out of the actions of your body, speech, and mind. You know, so it's not as if our future for all of us is unknown. Right? Our future will be, you know, the external conditions may change, but how it is to be us will come out of how we are right now. How we are right now is very much the product, is the product of what has happened to us and how we've thought and felt in the past. So he's really taking the mystery out of life. And of course, what he sees is a dead person. He sees a dead person. And not only does he see a dead person who's laid out alone in a room covered with a sheet, but he hears people in the business courts talking about this guy who died in not very kind ways. He hears other people who knew this man talking with him, and the only happiness in their voice is that maybe somehow their debts to him will be lost and they won't have to pay. He sees that all the goods of this person, including the sheets and the drapes and the shroud and everything that were in this man's room, are now being taken to a like a pawn shop to be sold. And they hear these people talking dismissively about the person that died, saying, you know, there was nobody there, nobody cares, so we just took everything. He was a miser anyhow. Never a kind word from him, never a good deed, never a generous thing. You know, he deserved what he got. So he sees, and of course, finally, he's taken to a cemetery. And a headstone is pointed out. And on that headstone is the name Ebenezer Scrooge. So he sees this is what is awaiting him if he doesn't change. And then when he saw the name Ebenezer Scrooge on the stone, "Am I the man who lay upon the bed," he cried, "upon his knees? The finger pointed from the grave to him and back again. No, spirit. Oh, no, no." But the finger was still there. "Spirit," he cried, tight, clutching the spirit's robe, "hear me. I am not the man I was. I will not be the man I must have been but for this intercourse. Why show me this if I am past all hope?" For the first time, the hand appeared to shake. And I think this is very wonderful, because in my workings with people over many years, I know that many people are caught in this dilemma. On the one hand, they have a desire from the inside for another life. And they have a desire to lead a life that's really of richness and goodness and happiness and open-heartedness, free of all stress and free of all constriction and narrowness and egocentricity. I mean, people have strong internal desires for a different sort of life. And yet at the same time, often individually, people have a sense, but probably not me. I'm too, I don't know what, too screwed up, too messed up. My karma is too heavy. My mind, I'm such a terrible meditator, and my mind so, yuck, you know what I mean? I mean, so many people have so many reasons, just like Scrooge, you know, they want, so he says to the spirit who has never talked, just points. He says, "Why are you showing me all this if I am past all hope?" Right. You know, it's sort of like, why are you talking to me about healing and transformation and enlightenment if I don't have the capacity? That only makes it worse. For the first time, this hand that just points things out, all of a sudden wavers. "Good spirit," Scrooge pursued, "as down upon the ground he fell before the spirit, your nature intercedes for me and pities me. Assure me that I may yet change these shadows you have shown me by an altered life." The kind hand trembled. "I will honor Christmas in my heart and try to keep it all the year. I will live in the past, present, and future. The spirits of the three shall strive within me. I will not shut out the lessons that they teach. Oh, tell me that I may sponge away the writing on this stone." In his agony, he caught the spectral hand. It sought to free itself, but he was strong in his entreaty and detained it. The spirit, stronger yet, repulsed him. Holding up his hands in the last prayer to have his fate reversed, he saw an alteration in the phantom's hood and dress. It shrunk, collapsed, and dwindled down into a bedpost. This is very wonderful. You know, this is very wonderful. Because at the end, we could say of this great inner journey, you know what I mean? I mean, this whole journey has really gone on in the mind of Scrooge, right? And at the end, where does he end up? Back in his bed, right? He's back in life again, right? And this whole illusory world of his mind that as you now through insights and understandings and intentions and aspiration has created, that's not enough, is it? He's back where? He's back in bed. He's back in reality. So let me, maybe we have time. It's really, let's read some of this. Yes, and the bedpost was his own. The bed was his own. The room was his own. Best and happiest of all, the time before him was his own. To make amends in, right? What is it that the Gata, when we wake up in the morning? 24 brand new hours. Right? What? 24 brand new hours, right? And look what he says. Time before Scrooge was his own to make amends in. He says, I will live in the past, present, and future, as he scrambled out of bed. The all spirits of all three shall strive within me. Oh, Jacob Marley, heaven and the Christmas time be praised. I say it on my knees, old Jacob, on my knees, he says it. So this, you know, this is not that that negative living in the past, present. This is, means he understands now how the past, present, and future are one, right? He understands that who he is now has is up to now has been the product of his past conditioning and has conditioned his present, which will condition his future. And with this understanding now, he realizes I can do it differently. I won't forget any of this, right? Now, many of us have this problem. We have understandings. We get insights. And how long do they last? Right? I mean, it's interesting. We are coming up to the New Year's. You know, we have a New Year's ceremony. I invite you all to it. But we've been through many New Year's ceremonies before. We have set many intentions. We've come out of retreat with many intentions. We find that is problematic, isn't it? It is so easy to just get hooked back to our defaults, using modern parlance, right? And what is our default? Our past conditioning. That is our default. And if our aspiration, intention isn't strong, the default will always win out. And so we will always find ourselves back in the same ruts, the same outlooks, etc. So he makes a vow. I'm not going to forget this. I'm not going to forget this. On his knees, right? I mean, maybe we need to get on our knees and really go, I am not going to forget this insight, right? And then he does this other marvelous thing, which we need to do, which is he gets right on it, okay? He doesn't go, all right, well, starting next year, you know, many of us go, all right, you know, I'm going to overeat now and indulge myself, but starting tomorrow, I am going to, you know, tonight I'll be lazy, I won't exercise, but next week I'm going to, this is the last time, I promise. Starting now, I will do it differently. We endlessly play this game with ourselves. But Dickens got it right. You know, the space between your intention and the doing should be as short as possible. Right? Because then you are actually taking a step in the direction you want, which is not just a mental step. Many of us just take mental steps. But he took an easy, you'll see, he takes a real step, right? But first he gets down on his knees and he says to Jacob, remember poor Jacob? Remember, if only you've seen the movies, going through life, right? All those chains. And if I remember, on those chains, there are clocks. There may be people in here whose life, who wear the chains of time very heavily. Always checking their watch. Always running from appointment to appointment and feel the pressure of time, getting things done on time. Please remember Jacob Marley. Wandering this world with chains of clocks. We don't want to end up like him, do we? So again, you remember just earlier that evening, Scrooge was, frightened by Marley. Didn't want anything to do with this, the ghost. And now he says, thank you, Jacob. I get it. Thank you for coming to warn me. Right? So sometimes people who bring us bad news, not bad news, but bring us truth, make us uncomfortable. People who go, this is the way it is, and this is where you're at. And, we don't like the mirror. Many of us are uncomfortable in the mirror because we don't like what we see. We like our own mirror, don't we? It kind of reflects us the way we want to think we are. It's a very interesting mirror many of us have. It is not a true mirror. It's our self-created mirror that we have designed just for ourselves. It shows the qualities we want to see and doesn't show the qualities we don't want to see. It's a wonderful mirror. But Jacob Marley held up the mirror to him, right? Scared the hell out of him. And yet by the end of the night, he's going, what? Thank you, Jacob. Thank you for holding up that mirror. Thank you for letting me see, not only let me see, my life clearly. Because to remember Scrooge, earlier that evening, he thought he what? He's like us. He thought he was what? Right. And I'm leading the good life. And all these other you-know-whats are just out there, stupid, foolish. Right? But I'm the one with the right values. I'm the one, right? Everybody else is wrong. We're right. But now he goes, no, that's not the case, is it? So he got out of his narrowness, he got out of his egocentric view of himself in life, and could all of a sudden see himself in the mirror of a much more, of what? That life wasn't about what? Gain, money, business. But it was about happiness, love, fellowship, kindness, generosity. See, in that mirror, Scrooge didn't look too good, did he? But in his own mirror, he looked great. So it's often hard for us to hold up a mirror. That's why we need good teachers and good friends who are willing to hold it up until we're ready to hold it up ourselves. All right, so he gets up off his knees. He's glowing with good intentions. He had been sobbing so violently in his conflict with the spirit, his face was wet with tears. Scrooge. His face was wet with tears. He looks around, things are not as he thought, everything's still there. I don't know what to do, cried Scrooge, laughing and crying in the same breath. I am as light as a feather. I am as happy as an angel. I am as merry as a schoolboy. I am as giddy as a drunken man. A Merry Christmas to everybody. A Happy New Year to all. If you've ever read descriptions of people who have enlightenment experience, these are often the qualities that people speak of. Why is he light? He says, I feel as light as a feather. that the whole burden of self, the whole burden of his past, all that heaviness that covered him, right, was gone. He wasn't feeling light because he went on a diet. Many of us think, oh, I know I'm going to feel light. I'll go on a diet. That's our society. It's all body-oriented. You know. He feels light because he's let go of his past. And he's let go of all those heavy ways of thinking and feeling which conditioned him. As well, his outlook is what? He's full of, he wants to help. You know? Those of us who have experienced the light, happy feelings that come when one was involved with helping others, right? And it's, you feel light, you feel happy. Right? It feels good. As opposed to all that time when we're lost in our own self-concern and self-absorption and self-narrative and rah, 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 rah. Right? You know that one. He's free of all that. I'm his light. He's happy. I'm light. I'm merry. I'm giddy as a drunk. He's had an enlightenment experience. See, many of us think an enlightenment experience is just like a psychological turning about in the mind, which in a certain way it is. But really what it's about, it's a totally different way of viewing things. Can you see? In one night, his view of himself and life has totally 100% changed. And he realizes what? That happiness, sadness, lightness, heaviness was always a product of me. We don't think so. We think it's external conditions, external situations, or my past, or whatever. That's what's conditioning me. But no, that's what's conditioning us. But it's because we are attached to that, and we live in that, and identify with that. We are held down by that. So Scrooge, we could say, has had. You know, he's healed. Remember, he's healed because what? He was able to go into the past and those really deeply traumatic experiences from childhood and adulthood, he was able to be present to and to cry for. He acknowledged the suffering, right, that he had experienced. So in that way, those places had healed. And he had connected with those parts of himself that wanted happiness, that wanted friendship, that wanted love, that wanted companionship, right? Those places in him that all of us have from childhood, he had connected with. And because he saw the possibility through the other, and especially that last one, because death means I understand the first, I understand the second, but I don't know how much time I have to do things differently, do I? Because in a certain way, all of us have that tombstone, cemetery waiting for. That's just the truth. That's not a morbid truth. That's just the truth. And so knowing that and having the desire to make some significant transformations before the end, and knowing we don't know the end's going to come, means what? That if I'm going to make a change, what do I know? I only know one thing. I have today. Right? If I'm going to be different, I'm going to have to do it today. So let's see what Scrooge does. So he goes around, I mean, he's just hooping and hollering, and he's just hooping and hollering, laughing, and running to the window, and he looks out. Wow. It's cold, but he goes, wow, great for the blood to dance to, right? It's the day's clear, how happy. The golden sunlight, heavenly sky, sweet fresh air, merry bells, glorious, glorious. What's that called? Living in the present moment. Things he never saw before, did he? What does he see? He's feeling the cold on his face. He's seeing the blue sky, the sun, the clouds. Right? How marvelous. I have eyes that see, I have ears that hear, skin that feel. It doesn't get any better than this. But most people, they're going through their day. They don't even notice the sky or the sun or the cool air on their face. Why? Because we have important business to do, don't we? Important business to take care of. We're serious people with serious things to do. So he calls out, there's a boy there, he finds out it's still Christmas, he's all excited, he finds out, anyhow, he sends the biggest turkey in the whole universe to the Cratchits, and he says, and don't tell them where it came from. How wonderful. Don't tell them where it came from. You just deliver it, and don't tell them where it came from. He's chuckling and laughing. He's happy. He chuckles. Look at this. This is the opposite of the miser. Right? The miser, right, every penny, they think to get anything out of the miser isn't easy, right? They make getting money out of them like, what's it called, getting blood from a turnip, or what is it? Blood from a turnip or other, you know what I mean? And that was Scrooge, and that's for many of us, you know. Giving money is painful. But he's chuckling. He says, you got to take this to the boy. He says, but take it in a cab. And he chuckles when he says this. He chuckled when he paid for the turkey. He chuckled when he paid for the cab. He chuckled when he gave money to the boy who had gotten the turkey. That was only exceeded by the chuckle with which he sat down, breathless in his chair again, and chuckled till he cried. He had trouble shaving because he was dancing. So it was very difficult to shave when you're dancing. And then he went out onto the streets and he regarded everybody with a delighted smile. He looked so irresistibly pleasant that, in a word, three or four good human people said to him, good morning, Merry Christmas. And he said it back to them. He had never heard these sounds before. You know how wonderful, right? I mean, again, you know, people walk down the street, what? Just totally absorbed in themselves and their own dramas. We don't even notice that we're passing fellow human beings. And at the very least, we have the capacity of what? Smiling to them, greeting them, acknowledging a positive connection. And then he goes on and he runs into one of the old gentlemen. Remember the ones who had come into his place asking for money? And then he comes up to him. He says, my dear sir, how do you do? I hope you succeeded yesterday. It was very kind of you. A Merry Christmas to you, sir. The guy goes, Mr. Scrooge? Yes, he says, that's my name, and I fear it may not be pleasant to you. Allow me to ask your pardon, and will you have the goodness? And he whispers in his ear. If you please, says Scrooge, not a farthing less. A great many back payments are included in it, I assure you. Will you do me that favor? My dear sir, the other says, shaking hands, I don't know what to say. This is such munificence. You know, obviously he's made a very significant donation. And Scrooge says, please don't say anything. Just come and see me. Will you come and see me? Thank you. I'm much obliged to you. I thank you 50 times. Bless you. I mean, how fascinating, right? He's saying thank you to a person who's asked him for money. Right? We go, they're going to come ask me for money again. Here they come again. How can I avoid them, you know? How can I not pick up the call? What can I, you know what I'm saying, how we are? I'm much obliged to you. Thank you. I thank you 50 times. You know why? I am grateful for the opportunity you've given me to help poor people, to help destitute, to help people in need, to contribute to something good. I'm grateful to you for giving me this opportunity. This is like 100% reversal than the ordinary ego mind. It only says what? I want to do it my way, right? I only want to do it my way. It's all about me. I thank you 50 times. And then he went to church, worked in the streets, watched people come to and fro, patted the children on the head, questioned beggars, looked down in the kitchen's window. Everything gave him pleasure. He had never dreamed that any walk, that anything could give him so much happiness. This is why I say this is a story of awakening. Can you see it? And it happened in one night. Remember? The Scrooge of the night before, when he walked from his office to his home on the same street, bah, humbug. Everything was an annoyance. Everybody was in his way. Right? And now, the next day, he wants to connect. Everything gives him pleasure. Seeing other people gives him pleasure. Talking to people gives him pleasure. Breathing gives him pleasure. I mean, this is a man who has woken up. And please understand, because many people, us included, you know, we've read too many spiritual books. We read too many of kinds of spiritual texts which make the journey from suffering to awakening, from ignorance to awakening, the journey of waking up into some kind of arduous process that only people who are capable of spiritual Olympics, only the very few who make it to the very top of the Olympiad could possibly wake up, right? Probably many people in here think that. Scrooge. You get it? Scrooge. If there was any more ignorant, selfish, obnoxious, mean-spirited, hateful human being in this world, it was who? Scrooge. One night. And what did he do? He didn't go on a retreat, a meditative. He didn't go on a 30-day Vipassana retreat. And I'm not knocking 30-day Vipassana retreats. But we have to understand, that the spiritual awakening is a very personal journey. And it's really about us willing to come totally present to the reality of our own life, the reality of our own suffering, seeing causes and conditions, knowing there's another way, and willing to live that other way. That's all. Right? And Scrooge got it in one night. He never went to college. He never read a Dharma text. If you mention Thich Nhat Hanh, the Dalai Lama, he'd look at you blankly. He had no spiritual books on his bookshelf. Did he? Didn't burn incense. Didn't bow to Buddhas. How did he do it? Well, I think we understand how he did it. Now, that's not saying that a spiritual tradition and a spiritual lineage and all the things we do aren't wonderful and meaningful and helpful. But the core of it is a personal journey. And it's not that hard. I mean, Scrooge just got it like, he's got like a very intense dose. You know, like in medicine, you know, there are some regimens which are spread out over time and some are like, you know, we just give it to you. Big. He got it big. But he got it. And then he ended up, he's back at work. Remember, that's where we started. He's back at the office. It's the day after Christmas. He's early at the office. He wanted to catch Bob Cratchit coming in late. That's the thing he had his heart set on. And he did it. Yes, he did. The clock struck 9, no Bob. 9:15, no Bob. 18 minutes and a half beyond the time, Scrooge sat with his door wide open so they might see him come in. And all of a sudden he came in, came running in, jumped onto his stool, started his pen, as if, okay. Scrooge says, "What do you mean by coming in at this time of day?" "I'm very sorry, sir. I am behind my time." "You are," repeated Scrooge. "Yes, I think you are. Step this way." This is real Scrooge. "It's only once a year, sir," pleaded Bob, appearing. It shall not be repeated. I was rather making merry yesterday." "Now I'll tell you what, my friend," said Scrooge. "I am not going to stand for this any longer. And therefore," leaping from his stool, giving Bob such a dig in the waistcoat that he staggered back in the tank again, "therefore I am going to raise your salary." Bob trembled. He got a little nearer to the ruler. He had a momentary idea of knocking Scrooge down with it, holding him, calling to people outside for help and a straitjacket. He thought Scrooge had lost his mind. He's gone crazy. "A Merry Christmas, Bob," said Scrooge, with an earnestness that could not be mistaken. And he clapped him on the back. "A merrier Christmas, Bob, my good fellow, than I have given you for many a year. I will raise your salary and endeavor to assist your struggling family, and will discuss your affairs this very afternoon over a Christmas bowl of smoking bishop. Bob, make up the fires, buy some more coal before you dot another I, Bob Cratchit." And then it says, Scrooge was better than his word. He did it all, and infinitely more. And to Tiny Tim, who did not die, if you remember when the ghost, Tiny Tim, had died. If nothing had changed, Tiny Tim would have died. And to Tiny Tim, who did not die, he was a second father. He became a good as friend, a good a master, as good a man, as the good old city knew, or any other good old city, town, or borough in the good old world. Some people laughed to see the alteration in him, but he let them laugh. And sometimes you might notice that when you change significantly, people who've known you for a while may think something has happened to you. They may laugh at you, or you know, belittle you, or be whatever. But he let them laugh. He little heeded them. For he was wise enough to know that nothing ever happened on this globe for good at which some people did not have their fill of laughter at the outset. And knowing that such as these would be blind anyway, he thought it quite as well that they should wrinkle up their eyes in grins as have the malady in less attractive forms. His own heart laughed, and that was quite enough for him. Scrooge had no further intercourse with the spirits. Then it says he lived upon the total abstinence principle, capital T, capital A, capital P. I'm not quite sure. It sounds almost like, but anyhow, we'll just say he led a good life. Maybe he abstained from scrooginess. maybe that's what he abstained from. But he lived upon the total abstinence from scrooginess principle ever afterwards. And it was always said of him that he knew how to keep Christmas well, if any man alive possessed that knowledge. And may that be truly said of us and all of us. And so, as Tiny Tim observed, God bless us, everyone. And that is the end of a Christmas carol. I wish you all a Merry Christmas. We'll stop here.